Welcome to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. I'm joined today, Mark Goody, and with me in the studio, we have the Open Goal stalwart, Simon Ferry. How are you, Simon?
Fine, mate, you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. Good wee morning. And beside him, we're delighted to say we are in the company of journalistic greatness, the legendary Hugh Keevan. Shuggy, how are you doing?
I'm fine. The coffin lid has been opened up and the body has been exhumed.
And I hope you've had a nice wee large half just to warm you up in this
weather. You see the snow falling still, even though we're approaching mid-March. So I had the St Bernard come round early this morning with the brandy, and here I am, tip-top condition.
Brilliant. What about it, Simon, being in the company of Hugh?
Oh, he's a legend, isn't he? He's got his Sunday best on as well.
He's looking smart, looking well. Uh-huh. Looking tip-top. Okay, so on the programme, we have four topics that are going to keep you entertained. We're going to have plenty of debate and opinion. We're going to speak about the introduction of VAR. Should it come in to Scottish football? Is it affordable? We're going to speak about hard men in football on the back of Simon's sit-down on Open Goal with Alec Ray. We're going to look at the hard man and how the role is taking on a different look over the years, and is there still a place for true hard men in football. We're going to touch on the Celtic Rangers game, or Rangers Celtic at Ibrox on Sunday lunchtime. Big game in terms of the direction of the league title. And also, since we have Huey here, we're going to touch on memory lane in terms of managers down through the decades and how the role has changed as well in the media in dealing with managers and players. And Huey will give us a wonderful insight into great men such as Sir Alex Ferguson, Jock Stein, Jock Wallace, Graham Souness, you name it, there'll be plenty of them to talk about. So we're going to keep you entertained for the next 40 minutes, and we'll crack on. The first subject we said is the introduction of VAR. The SFA have backed VAR. Huey, do you think we need it? Because we might struggle financially to put it in place. Should it be a priority, or are there other areas of the game where we could spend the money more wisely?
I personally don't see it as a priority, Mark. I think if there's any spare money sloshing around in the SFA fund, then they should devote it to other causes, such as youth development, because we look out the window, we can see the snow continuing to fall, even though we're in March. We live in an unpredictable climate. It makes the coaching of youngsters difficult, makes the coaching of senior players difficult in some cases. So if there's any spare money, let's see what we can do to improve coaching facilities, see what we can do to build indoor facilities. I'm not against the introduction of 21st century technology to answer serious issues within a game, but I do think the cost is prohibitive where Scottish football is concerned. And I also think that VAR affects the fabric of the game as I know it. When I started watching football, or started working in football as a journalist, you accepted that the referee's decision might not have been right, and you, if you're a fan, could accuse him of this, that and the other, but you moved on. Mm-hmm. In the 21st century, people are unwilling to move on. They want to see justice being done. I'm not quibbling with that as a philosophy, but in terms of VAR, football, finance, we can't afford it here. And if there's spare money, devote it to the things that we should be devoting that money towards.
As a player, Simon, are you for it?
No, I hate it. As I said, guy who's watching it, I think he's been sitting at the VAR for too long, having too many drinks. I mean, they still kind of get it right, even with the videos, it baffles me. And I agree with you, if there's money there, it'd be better spent elsewhere. Like I said, I take an under-10s team. I think we've trained four times since January because of the weather. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are the elite players in Scotland that we're talking about training four times in 3 months. It's just nowhere near good enough, you know. If we're wanting a brighter future for them, we need to put more money into that.
And the thing is, I mean, ultimately we say we want to get to the right decision, and if that takes a minute or two, it's better having the wrong decision. But it just at the moment when you watch it, particularly down south, yeah, it just seems so, the process seems so disjointed.
Uh-huh. If you watch the NFL, for example, American sports fans are used to the game stopping, decisions being argued over, and then a call being made. But I look at what's happening in England just now, as you said, there have been examples so far of the game being broken up, the fans being unsure of what's happening exactly. And then at the end of it all, they don't even agree. They don't have a unanimous decision on what they've actually seen. So I do understand that the naked eye is a letdown at times, but it's the way we've always been. Yeah. It's the way our game is. It's the way our people like to see the game. I think if you accept that the referee, through use of the naked eye, gets it wrong occasionally, then I would say that's the story of everyone's life. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get it wrong.
You've got to allow for human error. I mean, yeah, it's all part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, me playing, I make plenty of human errors, believe me. Too many. But for players, there's nothing. After a game, you love speaking about the ref. You know what I mean? See you on our journey back to Peterhead, 3 years that gets spoken about by the referee. And obviously, they're not perfect, but neither are players. Players make mistakes. That's what makes fans talk about players' mistakes. Players talk about refs' mistakes. That's what makes football brilliant.
Well, we've had a couple of big instances in the past 10, 11 days. You go back to Rugby Park 10, 11 days ago, and it was Kilmarnock against Hibs. Kevin Clancy awards a penalty against Hibs. Neil Lennon disagrees, goes off in one after the game. On Sunday there at Firth Park, the William Hill Scottish Cup tie, Andrew Dallas disallows a Motherwell goal, but John McLaughlin has his hand on the ball. Those kind of things, ultimately I think one decision was right, one decision was wrong, but it gets us all talking.
Yeah, I don't think the penalty awarded to Kilmarnock was a penalty. I think Neil Lennon's reaction was over the top. Neil is a mature man with tremendous managerial experience on his CV now. He's been a manager in the Champions League, the highest level of all. And he has to show greater composure and maturity on the touchline, no matter how incensed he may be. But Kevin Clancy, for me, got it wrong. So there's one point against the naked eye. Andrew Dallas, who for me is not the referee his father was, but he got it absolutely right. The naked eye was 100% correct in that instance, because if you apply the letter of the law, as you're supposed to do, it wasn't a goal. And although Chris Cadden had a wonderful look of bewilderment on his face, it wasn't a legitimate goal. So, naked eye, score draw.
So, in terms of VAR, no.
Nah.
No.
Not for our game. I agree, we've got so many things to tackle, you know, financially. I don't think it's a priority, is it?
No, as I say, any spare money we have, there are a whole lot of causes that could do with that money. And Simon's talking about the coaching of young players. Surely, you're better to see that than have exotic television equipment. And at the end of the day, not everyone can come to the same decision even after watching the exotic television equipment.
So there we are, we've had the verdict on VAR. It's not for us in Scottish football, not yet. Next topic we're going to speak about here on the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground, we are going to speak about hard men in football with Simon Ferry.
A hard man of football, I thought you were going to
A hard man of football and a hard man of journalism. The Clyde One Super Scoreboard legend Hugh Keevans is with us too. This subject is coming up because at the moment on Simon Ferry Meets, he's got the big sit-down with Alex Ray, and the feedback we've had on that has been brilliant. And it's just let us speak about the subject of hard men in football. Hughie, I take it, going down through the decades from the 60s to now, the role of the hard man, the enforcer, has changed.
Yeah, I mean, Davy Hay was once called the quiet assassin by Tommy Docherty, then Scotland manager. Davy Hay was a hard, hard boy for Celtic. And I've watched similar players like him. Davy Hay had a lot of ability, though, to go with the hard man image. And I think the role of the hard man has had to change because football has evolved and there's simply no room for some hod carrier going around assaulting people in the middle of the park. I was at testimonial dinner for Scott Brown on Sunday night, and I recognise the modern day aspect of his game. He can put in a tackle if it's necessary. He can bully if it's necessary, but he can play. You don't get 55 caps for Scotland if you cannot play and achieve the things that he has achieved as Celtic captain at the same time. So the role has had to change because the game has changed. There was a time when it was unarmed combat and there were hard cases. I mean, people revel in the stories of Tam Forsyth at Rangers, and they're quite right. Tam Forsyth, as Jimmy Nichol used to say, he's got tattoos in his teeth. So, you know, he was a joy to behold when there was a bit of that needing done. But the game's changed. The players wouldn't get away with any of that now, and they've had to be hard, but to a point. And they also need ability above all.
In terms of, you know, your involvement in the game, Simon, 13, 14 years, have you noticed a big change in what you can get away with and what you can't now?
Definitely. I mean, I'm just talking on Alex's interview, I asked him the best players he played against, and it was Roy Keane, Vieira and Makélélé. Now, straight away, three hard men for me, Makélélé, Vieira and Keane, and they could all play as well. I just didn't think you get that type of player anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I watch Man City. Would day three players play in a Man City team? I don't think they would. Now it's all about, as Hugh says, it's all about passing and ability with these top teams. And I miss the days of the hard men. I think it's brilliant. I loved having one in my team. Mm-hmm. And I like playing against one as well, a proper man who wanted to tackle.
So then, who's the best hard man that you've played with alongside you, and who's the worst if you'd like to play against?
We had Jonathan Douglas, a guy who 12 times for Ireland, I've spoken about him on here before. He played Gaelic before he played football, and he was a hard, hard boy, even in training. And it brought your game on, because uh-huh. You had to move it quick, because he'd come and he would smash you. And it would help you, it would improve you as a player. I got the graveyard shift for Swindon 1 week, right wing. FA Cup against Leicester, Paul Konchesky was left back. Oh my God, I swear to God. I've never been so scared on a football pitch in all my life. Uh-huh. He was not up for a laugh at all. First minute I got the ball and he absolutely smashed it. I thought he broke my kneecap. The can was like, "Demi, get up, play on," because he played him at West Ham. It was a red card, 100%. The can's like, no, it's fine, to the ref. For the next 8 to 9 minutes, he just booted us up and down the Walker Stadium, honestly. So Paul Konchesky was as hard as they come. But as you say about Bruni, I said last week as well, Bruni's made of metal. You used to kick Bruni and it would hurt you when you kicked him. He was just a strong, strong boy. But the thing I like about him, again, he can give it out, but he can take it back.
We look at, for example, the team at the moment's Man City. We're all raving about them in Pep Guardiola. Yeah. The finesse in their game, the way that they're just so precise, and they're passing their movement. Then you look at Arsenal, who are under the microscope again, under Arsene Wenger, saying that it's time for them to go. And they're saying that one of the things that Arsenal lack is a right proper centre-half and a right good Patrick Vieira type in the middle part. So we're saying on one hand that they're out of the game, but yeah, when teams are struggling, we're saying, well, that's what you're missing. Yeah. And do you think Arsenal are missing that, Hugh?
Yeah, I mean, Tony Adams, legendary figure at the Arsenal. That's part of his problem. I think Arsene's problem is he's overstayed his welcome by about 10 years. But yeah, Tony Adams could play as well and was part of the Invincibles for Arsenal. But there are aspects of the game now where the hardest men will not be tolerated. You know, the Roy Keane's and what Roy could do, and Vieira, what he could do, in today's world, they wouldn't get away with it.
No. They're saying Arsenal miss a hard man in the middle of the pitch, but Man City played with Gundogan sitting in the middle of the pitch. Mm-hmm. Never made a tackle, but he never gave the ball. He touched the ball more than anyone else on the pitch. So I think Arsenal's problems are much bigger than a hard man in the middle of the pitch.
See, we were about to inherit Scott McTominay, who makes his presence felt in the middle of the park, and delighted to have him there, but he can play. Mm-hmm. You know, and he epitomises the modern day type. I'm a little bit concerned, going off track for a second, that he's been hailed as the saviour of Scottish football and he hasn't played at any international level yet for us. But Scott McTominay is emblematic of the modern day.
Mm. I mean, he's what, he's 6'4", isn't he? Yeah. But I noticed in the game against Crystal Palace, he can put a tackle in when he needs to. And the thing as well that I like about, without having watched the boy a lot, is you can tell Mourinho loves him. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mourinho sees something in it, and that's good enough
for
me. He
wouldn't be anywhere near the first team if Mourinho didn't have that high regard for him. And Pogba wouldn't occasionally be sitting on his backside watching McTominay play if Mourinho didn't have that regard for him. So I really, really welcome him to the international fold for us.
Who were the other ones? Was Souness hard to hear?
Dear. Well,
you've ever seen the tackles in Ziggy Johnson,
nah,
Peter Nicholas?
Yeah.
First game.
George McCluskey.
Easter Road.
Right.
Sent off.
Was the one in the old film games? Was it Billy Stark?
Billy had no boot on at the time. And not content with putting Starkey up in the air and getting a red card, he then challenged the referee in the car park afterwards. How hard do you want him to be?
And yet, when you look, I always look at, and I think I've said this before, but look at Graeme Souness in the Sky Sports studio. For me, he's still got that authority, that presence, and you just, when he speaks,
I know
you
we'll
listen.
Get to it in the latter stages of the conversation, but the greats had a presence when they walked into the room, whether it was Jock Stein, Sir Alex, Sue had it as well. Real presence about him, and believe me, I've seen the other side of it, and it's not pleasant if you're on the other side of it.
Well, just we'll touch on Alec Ray as well, and if you haven't watched the interview with Simon Ferry, please do, because the feedback, Simon, you must be chuffed with the feedback that you've had, because it was a great subject to sit down with.
I'm Rangers fans number one guy now. Love it. The feedback we've got on Twitter for Rangers fans has been brilliant. And the thing I loved about Alex Ray, you could tell he was just a boy for the scheme. He's got a great patter, great stories, and a hard guy who loves playing football and was a great player. I remember I played a reserve game, a total miss. I was only 16 or 17, I think I was on the bench down at Dumbarton. Mm-hmm. And Alec played for Rangers, and he absolutely ran the show. I think he was 36, 37. And we would have had boys, good players. I think first team we played at that time, maybe Pearson and players like that, and Alex Ray was magnificent. He was 36, 37. No, just a hard guy you could play, you know.
One of my favourite people. You know, again, Simon has discovered the great storyteller. Could play. Wore his heart on his sleeve. He's a Rangers man through and through. And he is not afraid to show that. Pedro Caixinha made a mistake by not bringing him on board, I think, at the time. We may have saved old Pedro. But a man who's had his issues in his private life, who has overcome all of them, who has rebuilt his life, and nobody's company I enjoy better than Alec Ray.
Yeah, he's better enough to still play six asides, excuse me, with him. With a game last week, Stirling Petrov was up. He came along and played with Chris Commons, with Stirling Petrov, with Mark Wilson, you get Ali McCoy. Petrov, final minute of the game. Next goal's the winner. The hour's up. Petrov's clean through, one on one. Alec in for the back, leathers him, takes him out. And I've just managed to get back. I'm in Alec's team, and I've just seen Stan landing. And if they look at Stan's face, and I'm thinking, this could go one way or another. This could kick off. Uh-huh. It was all rest, and it's that split second, and you can see Petrov thinking, what do I do here? And Stan, he made a wee joke, that should be a red card. And I'm thinking, good. The situation was diffused, and they got the winning goal. But Alec, he just, even at sixes, he hates losing. But you're right, just a lovely guy.
Yeah.
And you know, we're fortunate, Hugh, in the business that we've been in, that allows us to meet some great people, some great sportsmen, and Alec's just a great guy, isn't he?
He's just terrific. He's inspirational. Alec Ray would do anything for anyone now. Mm. But Alec Ray has looked down both barrels in the game of life, and his whole life could have gone in an entirely different direction. But he took responsibility for his life, rebuilt it, and they have the utmost admiration for him.
Definitely. Well, touching on the hard men in football, and we say, if you haven't listened to it, tune into Simon's podcast with Alec Ray, particularly in this week of all weeks where we've got it coming up. Hugh, what is it? Demolition Derby, what else have we got? We've got the lot, haven't we? We've got Rangers Celtic, high noon, 12 o'clock Sunday, Ibrox Stadium. Just to touch it quickly, Rangers on a good bit of form.
Yeah.
Last time they played against Celtic, 0-0 at Celtic Park, December 30th. You could argue very unlucky not to get the 3 points. Yeah. The Rangers supporters seem to think their time might be coming this weekend.
Well, I've declared myself early. I think that's the best thing to do in Peace and Harmony week. Just declare yourself early. I think Rangers will win the match. I think for the first time in 2 years since Ronnie Dyla left town, Rangers have a team who are capable of giving Celtic a game and capable of winning that game. I think that they will. They've played 10 matches since the season resumed after the midwinter break. They've scored 31 goals in those 10 matches. They look a very organised unit, and particularly middle to front, they look highly threatening. And I think that for the first time in 2 years, they will get a victory over Celtic.
Mireille Lesser, a match winner?
Or Jason Cummings, you know, can do no more than score a hat-trick in the game before that. I think Rangers are in the fortunate position of having goal scorers all over the place. Cummings, Morelos, Jamie Murphy will chip in with a goal. Windass has scored a large number of goals and is a real threat. Sean Goss, set pieces, whatever.
Lovely left peg, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's a good player, Goss.
I think that by Sunday around 2 o'clock, we'll have a title race. And you know, people are taking these two words, title race, as being inflammatory, provocative. But competition, as Simon knows, is the essence of sport in general, and the essence of football in particular. So if Rangers win this match on Sunday and they're only 3 points behind Celtic, who will have a game in hand, we will have a title race.
Simon, take us behind the scenes, Old Firm Week, whether it was at Barrowfield or at Lennox Town. Just give us an insight. You know, obviously, this would just be a Celtic point of view because you've been at Celtic. What's it like?
Well, it's a week like no other, definitely. Everyone's so up for the game. I mean, it runs throughout the whole club. Chefs, kit men, laundry ladies, everyone. They're so excited for the game. And I always remember the week leading up to Old Firm game, me and Michael Gardine used to get in trouble all the time. And we would always say to each other, this is the 1 week, do not get in trouble, man. Because people are up to
trouble
high.
Trouble with who?
With the manager, just carrying on, stuff like that. I was on my best behaviour Old Firm week because the preparation was so intense. I mean, the week training up, if you're lucky enough to get called up to train with the first team, it was 100 mile an hour.
Yeah.
Proper at it. Top players looking forward to playing in a top game.
Who would you see in that daily basis just take it up a notch in the build-up to an Old Firm game?
Well, Bruni made sure everyone knew exactly what it meant. Lenny was the exact same. I mean, they two absolutely loved for these sort of games, you know. And they made sure that all the boys who maybe never knew what it meant, they knew. The manager as well, Strachan, they'd always do a lot more shape leading up to the Rangers game, and we were usually the diddies that would get called up to be the 11 against them. But I remember when I used to work at the games, this was when I was really young, and Big Sutton would always say the week leading up, got a bad feeling about Saturday, lads. I think we're going to get beat. I think it's going to be bad, this one. But I think that was just his way of dealing with the pressure. But no, they're great weeks and they're great games to play in for everyone.
See, it's more than just a football match. I mean, this is a Scottish cultural phenomenon. I know that the term Old Firm is outlawed by one half of the city, but it was the Old Firm in the beginning, and it's a Scottish cultural phenomenon. I watched John Gregg and Billy McNeil, who for me are the two greatest men ever to have represented Rangers and Celtic. I watched John Gregg and Billy McNeil and the respect that they had for each other off the park. It was immense. Mm-hmm. I've watched countless players. Ian Durant, who everyone thinks is Rangers mad and wouldn't have a Celtic player near him. Ian Durant and Peter Grant, put them in the same room. They're like brothers. Mm-hmm. The players can handle it, the people can't. And it's a Scottish cultural phenomenon for that reason, because it divides an entire country on the day. This is a very special match, and we should be delighted that we have such a match at this time in the season, because competition is the essence of sport. And if Rangers win, we have a title race. If Celtic win, I don't believe we have a title race. May the best team win.
We'll get Simon's view on the outcome of the game in a moment, but just, Hugh, you've touched on it there, the best part of 50 years covering Celtic v Rangers games. Give us a couple that stick out in your mind for whatever reason.
You know, title winners are obviously high on that list. I remember the game when Davy Provan and Murdo McLeod had gone to Celtic mid-season. Celtic had been woeful at the start of the season and then took off on a run, inspired by Murdo and Davy Provan. And it got to Celtic's last game of the season, Celtic Park. They won 4-2. Murdo McLeod scored the fourth goal. Celtic played for a long time with 10 men.
John 1979.
Doyle, 79, yeah. John Doyle sent off. I remember 4-4 at Ibrox. Incredible stuff. Mm-hmm. Celtic 3-1 up. Rangers then 4-3 in front. Again, Murdo McLeod scored the goal. It was 4-4 with 19 minutes left to play. And very rarely have I seen it. In fact, it may be unique. At the end of that game, both sets of supporters applauded the teams off the park. Mm-hmm. It was a fantastic game, a roller coaster of emotions. Use any cliche you wish. I think back, for me, what sums it all up, Celtic in Martin O'Neill's first Old Firm derby wins 6-1.
6-2.
6-2. Mm-hmm. Pardon, 6-2. In his second Old Firm derby, he loses 5-1. Now, mm-hmm. you know, there's an old reporter's joke. Only a fool would predict the outcome of the Old Firm game. I go for a draw. You know, you know, so those two games, Martin O'Neill on one side, Dick Advocaat on the other, 6-2, 5-1, weeks apart. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think we should revel in the occasion, revel in the ramifications of the occasion, should Rangers win. But if Celtic win and they rarely lose the really, really, really important games under Brendan Rodgers. In fact, I can't think of a massive domestic match that Celtic have lost under Brendan Rodgers. But I just happen to think that Rangers right now are the team on the money and Celtic aren't.
Just to go back, I don't want to make it a history lesson. We want to keep it up to date as well. But the 1980 Scottish Cup final, did that change the landscape, Hugh, slightly in terms of, you know, behaviour and what became acceptable inside football grounds?
Well, very rarely do you find a football match that brings government legislation into being. And that game is the reason why we have the Criminal Justice Scotland Act and why for the last 38 years people have been unable to take alcohol into Scottish football grounds. It was appalling that day. Genuinely appalling.
The worst you've covered.
When I was a child going to these matches, it was commonplace to have 100 arrests and more inside the ground. Bottle throwing was commonplace. And it was ludicrous because the bottles were thrown from the back of the terracing down to the front. They had no hope of reaching any of their targets on the park. But children congregated at the front. So it was horrific. But that day, when everyone should have known better, there was a riot, and the word riot is often used ill-advisedly, but there was a riot. And I remember Eric Craig, who was a photographer at the Daily Record at the time, he had a fractured skull and at one stage in the hospital was touch and go. You can't have that in a civilised society. Mm-hmm. You know, Celtic won in the extra time, and deservedly so. They were playing under strength. They simply played better on the day and won the cup. You have to have a realisation that the best team won, and the idea of coming onto the park and rioting over it is simply unacceptable. And that's why I am still opposed, 38 years later, to the idea of alcohol being allowed on the terracings, because for me, particularly in the context of this particular Glasgow derby, it doesn't work.
Okay, back up to date. Sunday, Hughie's going for a Rangers victory. I probably tend to agree with him. Okay. So I think Rangers might just edge it. What's your thoughts on it?
Rangers have got the form, there's no doubt about that. I mean, I watched Rangers against St Johnston for an hour. I thought they were magnificent. Really great, played some great football. I think their January signings have been brilliant. You mentioned Goss, Murphy. Celtic, I watched against Morton. I thought they were terrible the first half against Morton. Really, really poor.
What's missing? Is there something you can put? Is it purely down to Sinclair? Dembele? What's missing from last season?
I don't know. I can't call it until I see the teams. Mm-hmm. I don't think Scott Sinclair can start this game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he's kicked his ass for about 10, 12 games. Rangers have got the form, but I just think Celtic have got a top class manager who's been there and done it in big games, and I think that's what could edge it. Again, whether Morelos or Cummins start, for me, if I was a Rangers fan, I'd want Cummins to play. I think he knows what the game's all about, and every time I've seen Morelos against Celtic, I think he's been poor in the Old Firm games, so I'll wait until I see the teams before.
So your two big calls, leave out Scott Sinclair, and play Cummins ahead of Morelos. That would be my big calls,
see, yeah.
I think the loss of the goalkeeper, Craig Gordon, is highly significant. Uh-huh. I don't have any faith in Doris de Vries. I think the loss of Lee Griffiths is significant, because he loves this fixture and he loves scoring goals, and he's getting closer to 100 for Celtic. I think he's a big miss. I am dumbfounded by Sinclair. The player of the year has vanished without trace, and I agree with Simon, he doesn't merit a starting place at Ibrox. But if the manager's thinking of Dembele and Edouard, it'd be a big call from him, because you never know, they could get swallowed up by it all. By the same token, they could rise to it, as Dembele did in Brendan Rodgers' first season, scored a hat-trick in his first Old Firm match. But I just think that Rangers are carrying all the cards at the moment.
I don't think for a minute he will play Dembele and Edouard, but if he does, Simon, tell me, Would it be as a partnership, or is does, can Edward play off? Or I think there's a bit of.
I don't think he'll play two either. Yeah. I think if it was at Parkhead, he'd maybe play two. But mm-hmm. I think if he was to play Edward, he'd maybe start on the left and drift in, and maybe they can switch. But another one as well is, does Comper play? He played on Saturday.
I think so, with Lustig not playing,
might go three at the back.
Three at the back, yeah. Forrest is the right wing back.
And you never know how these guys are. All right, he's a German international, or he's played at the top level in Germany, but you never know how these guys are going to react to their first whole Firm game.
You must have seen a couple of guys, just like you're talking about there, just, wow, just the game, the old Firm game, just swallowed them up. Can you give us one or two examples?
Well, I remember I was a 20th man at Ibrox. Me and Paddy McCourt were in the stand. It's a great combo, me and Paddy. I think we're steaming by half time. No, I'm kidding. And just see the drive to Ibrox and all that.
Which game exactly was it?
I think it was a draw. I think Big Darren made a mistake for one. Either Rangers won or it was a draw. Big Darren made a mistake at the back post.
Gordon Strachan,
uh-huh.
Gordon against Watersmith.
Watersmith, uh-huh. And just the drive up to Ibrox, seeing the fans and stuff getting chucked at the bus, and it is an experience that you can't even explain it in words, you know. For these big guys like Comper, he will not know what's happening. Getting off the bus at Ibrox is a big thing. And nobody who knew who I was, but I think we got beat actually in the Old Firm game. And see, I've never seen a dressing room so deflated after an Old Firm loss. It was, you're scared to speak. No one wanted to speak first, you know. It was silence for a good 30 minutes, and it's something I've never experienced since, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens this Sunday. It's a big game, high noon, Ibrox Stadium, Rangers v Celtic. Hughie Keevans is going for a Rangers victory, and that means game on. We've got a title race, Simon edging just towards Celtic to produce the goods. We'll see what happens. It's certainly going to be a cracker, a big weekend. We've also got the Edinburgh Derby on Friday night as well. Quick prediction of that.
I'm going to go for Hibs, because I think that Neil Lennon was so outraged by that remark about the natural order of things the last time. I think he would be tearing the paint off the walls in the dressing room if his players let him down in this one. Hibs.
Simon?
Where is it? Tynecastle or Easter Road?
Easter Road.
Yeah, I'll go Hibs. Hibs at home.
Two Hibs victories. I'll go for a draw. So, final part of the show. It's been a pleasure having your company. I knew you would join us today when you heard who we had on the programme. Sitting alongside Simon Ferry is the Super Scoreboard legend. Hugh Keevan's delighted that Hughie has joined us. We're into the last part of the programme, and it's going to be well worth the wait. We are here keeping the ball on the ground with our friends at William Hill. Hughie, let's touch on it. Give us some stories, the men that you've had to interview, the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs, yeah. The bands, the Barneys, the bevy, you name it. Go on, kick us off.
Well, I started January 5, 1970, so I've been doing this dodge for 48 years. And when I started, the manager of Celtic was Jock Stein, and the manager of Rangers was Willie Waddle. And the first piece of advice I was given regarding Jock: don't ask him a question unless you're absolutely confident in your ability to get the question out. So I think I asked him my first question of him round about 1974. With Willie Waddle, I made the schoolboy error of calling him Willie rather than Mr. Waddle at the end of a match. And he lowered his glasses to the middle of his nose. He looked over the top of his glasses and he said, "Did you go to school with me?" And I had absolutely no recollection of Willie ever having gone to St. Thomas Aquinas Secondary, so I said no. And he went up the marble staircase, got halfway up, looked down at me as if I was nuclear waste, and said, Willie. So I never made that mistake with him. When I first encountered Alex, as he was then, he had just become the manager of St Mirren and was doing great things at Love Street, and I was asked to do a 3-week series on the Alec Ferguson story. So we agreed a fee, and he said to me, "You know that fee, tax man will get all of that." So we came up with a cunning plan, and the organisation I was working for then, we bought Kathy Ferguson, Mrs. Ferguson, a washing machine.
Brilliant.
So my first encounter with Alex, it was payment in kind, and he got a washing machine. We went on to have a colourful career, him and I, after that. He moved to Aberdeen, and, you know, for me, I'll preface this by saying, for me, he's the greatest Scottish manager who ever lived, simply because of his body of work, what he achieved in winning European trophies with Aberdeen, and what he achieved breaking all manner of records domestically and in terms of European football with Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world. So for me, he's the governor, the top man. But what a temper. He won the Cup Winners' Cup with Aberdeen against Real Madrid, as everyone knows, and the following season they began the defence of the trophy in Reykjavik, Iceland. They played Motherwell the Saturday before leaving for Reykjavik, and they were hopeless. At Motherwell, the press are gathered in the foyer at that time near the front door, and Alec had been upstairs speaking to directors, and he came down the stairs and he started giving me what for from the top stair down to the bottom. And by the time he got to the bottom, he said, "I'm not taking anything from you, but Aberdeen, you never come and see us." So I went back to the office and I checked, and the season before I had watched Aberdeen at Pittodrie 19 times. So in those days, you still had the manager's number at home. So I called them at home and I said, "Listen, I've just checked the records. I was at Pittodrie 19 times last season." And he said, "I don't give a..." So we went to Iceland. Game finished. He said, "Where are you staying?" And I pointed across the road. We were literally across the road from the stadium. He said, "What number's your room?" I told him the number of the room. He said, "Get your guys." And I thought, what? Gang warfare? So he came into the room and he said, "Listen, I gave this man dog's abuse in front of an audience on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to apologise to him in front of an audience." He said, "Yours was just the first big ball face I saw when I came down the stairs, so you got it." We had great fun. The European trips were marvellous. We fell out over the most ridiculous thing ever when we arrived in a European destination, can't remember which one, and he said, "Get your guys together, we're having a quiz tonight." So we had the quiz. Last question, Simon was talking about things that happened right at the last minute. Last question, pop trivia. Who had a number one hit, one hit wonders, with Uptown Top Ranking? So I've got it. I said, Althea and Donna. And Davey Wiley, who's Aberdeen's physio, looked at...
He's a quizmaster.
He looked at Alec. And I said, "What are you looking at him for? Is it right or wrong?" "Althea and Donna." I repeat, "Althea and Donna." And he looked at Alec again. I said, "Why do you keep looking at him?" And at that point, I heard Alec saying, "How did you know that?" And I said, "What's that got to do with?" He said, "How did you know that?" I said, "How does anybody know anything?" I said, "You're the one that tells us all the time, name me the 12 angry men from the famous Henry Fonda movie. Not only can you tell us the names of the 12 actors, you can tell us the names of the actors' parts in the film. How do you know that? Don't you get cheeky with me." And that, one word borrowed another. The hotel manager came over and suggested that unless we quiet down, the whole Aberdeen team might be removed from the hotel. And I thought, oh no, I don't want to be responsible for that. You had all manner of fun with Sir Alex, with Billy McNeil, with John Gregg, Suey was magnificent. He blamed me for leaking information about his team one time on Radio Clyde. And then the weeks passed, and I was walking up to Fir Park, brawly, lashing with rain, and the head come underneath the brawly beside me and said, "You still causing trouble?"
Is he Welsh?
And he agreed to do a Christmas special with me on Radio Clyde. Came in on Christmas Eve, recorded it for 2 hours, the two best hours of broadcasting arguably I've ever done, not because of me, but because as Simon found out with Alec Ray, it's all about what they tell you. And I thought that Souness was magnificent. They were larger than life, Alex, Graham Souness, Billy McNeil. I mean, Billy was my boyhood hero. And to speak to Billy McNeil felt like a privilege to me. But he is a great man. He's still with us. May he be with us for a long time. These were great, larger-than-life characters. And that's why I always say to people who ask about the job and the length of time you've been doing it, listen, it's better than working.
I can't let you sit with us and not mention the Celtic Social Club.
Oh, yes.
Kenny Dalglish. Yes. Go on, give us that story.
Well, you know, John Barnes I thought the whole thing was ill-judged. Celtic's then chief executive, Alan McDonald, I thought made a mistake. He was too in awe of Kenny Dalglish. Kenny Dalglish was allowed to bring in John Barnes, who had no managerial experience whatsoever. And so it led to what we all know. It was very, very unfortunate, let it be said, that he lost Henrik Larsson to a leg break. If you lose Henrik Larsson, you've lost 50% of your chances anyway. But I just thought it was going from bad to worse and wrote it. And that led to going in there on the Friday morning to the Celtic Social Club, and the gentleman came over and he asked me to leave. I won't use all the terminology that was used. And I remember Ian McGarry, who was a colleague of mine at the time, worked for the Daily Mail. I said, you do realise you're going to make this man famous. And Finn Barrow Brannigan was the name of the man throwing me out. It wasn't his real name, but that was the one he used. And he said, in true Alec Ferguson style, I don't give a... And so I finished up outside the door. A terrible hoo-ha, as you know, Mark. You were there at the paper at the time. Big hoo-ha when you're thrown out by Kenny Dalglish. Celtic played at Dens Park and played very, very well on a snowy day. Mark Viduka had an outstanding game. And I could hear the rumbling. Now, who among us has not had a dream about the day when the football crowd rise to chant your name? And then they said, Hugh Keevans, you're a... they said I was a banker, but I had nothing to do with the financial world at the time. So, but the final story regarding the expulsion from the Celtic Social Club, there was all sorts going on, and I was at a hole in the wall getting some money. And I felt something very sharp in the middle of my back. And the voice said to me, don't move. And I thought, oh no, this is taking it too far. And I, don't move and put your hands in the air. I thought, oh. And I turned around, it was Bobby Williamson. And he was so shocked by my reaction, because I thought I was going to pass out, Simon, that we went to Charlie Nicholas, had a pub in town at that time, went to Charlie Nicholas's pub and spent the rest of the afternoon...
Surely not with Bobby.
Yes, spent the rest of the afternoon reminiscing, shall we say.
If Bobby's listening, I wish Bobby all absolutely. The best too, back to full health, I'm sure he's... He's getting there. Simon, I don't know about you, but I've sat and listened to Hughie's stories for nearly 20 years at the Sunday Mail. A wonderful colleague and a great friend, and still going strong. And it's been a pleasure to have him on the Open Goal podcast today, keeping the ball on the ground with our friends at William Hill. I'm sure you'll agree, Simon.
Definitely. I mean, some of the names that he's dealt with, one of my favourite podcasts. Really enjoying it.
Thanks. Brilliant. Thanks, Hughie, to both of you.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
It's been our pleasure.
Cheers, Hugh.
Well, I knew you would listen in. I knew you'd stay with us until then. You didn't want to miss that. We've had 43 minutes of wonderful stuff from Simon Ferry and from our special guest, Hugh Keevans. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Guidi. I'm sure you'll join us next week for the Open Goal podcast. Have a nice weekend.